This is Hannah Forden, and I'm here at the James Beard House for a special edition of Heritage Radio Network on Tour. We are here for the Knockout of Knoxville, which is a dinner showcasing four very talented chefs from Knoxville, Tennessee. We are here thanks to our friends Springer Mountain Farms and Visit Knoxville, who have made this event possible. And we're really looking forward to hearing about the culinary scene in Knoxville, as well as what we'll be eating this evening. I am here with Drew McDonald. Drew is the co-owner and chef at the Plaid Apron, which opened in 2011. He co-owns it with his wife, Bonnie. They serve a very ambitious three meals a day and have a full-service bakery. The restaurant brings together a community of diners, farmers, and good food. And I hear, Drew, that you started out getting your degree in systems management.
So I was actually pre-med. Realized real quick that the life in a library is not the best life for me. Very much an outdoor, hands-on, don't sit around very well sort of guy. But then I found out and switched my degree to food systems management and got a job at a restaurant, fell in love, went to culinary school, and here we are.
The rest is history.
The rest is a blink of an eye.
Yeah, so you got into cooking for the pace of it, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I've always enjoyed it. I mean, coming from, born and raised in Middle Tennessee, I always said I had three sets of grandparents. One in Florida, two, my great aunt and uncle, and my father's parents in Middle Tennessee. Always had a garden, both of them. We always had fresh eggs. Our canned vegetables were from them. Came in a mason jar. They didn't use a can opener, pop that open. So I was very blessed in that sense. And I guess technically I've always just enjoyed cooking and been around it, but never really thought of it as a career. And then when you try to choose a career and the career doesn't choose you, you just roll with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think some people are just like destined to find their way to it, especially when you grow up around food.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Indeed.
So I hear you spent some time before opening your restaurant cooking in New Zealand.
I did. I've truthfully been very blessed from a culinary background, from spending, you know, a little more than 2 years at Blackberry Farm, and then got married while I was there. And my wife and I actually met in New Zealand, and I still to this day, if she gave me the thumbs up, we'd try and move back and do it all over again. But we just packed up, and I was ready for a change, and she was willing to roll with it, and took a visa, a working visa for a year, and didn't make it a year. We made it almost 4 months. We were young, ambitious, and very independently minded, and said we weren't going to waste our time while we were there as far as moving on in our career. And she is a horse trainer by trade, and we couldn't do food and horses in the same city, and we weren't going to live in the different cities on the other side of the world. So we packed it up and came home and moved back to Nashville.
Yeah. I'm curious how, I think in New Zealand, also just like in the southeast of the United States, there's a great deal of farms. And so I'm curious where the parallels are between the food culture and...
You know, I had a really awesome foundation with Blackberry, but literally the three and a half months that I spent in New Zealand changed my life and my vision regarding food. I like to consider the United States, there's a bunch of microclimates and a bunch of micro minds at the same time. We all have, you know, how we want things, how we do things. We're in America where food is cheap. Lots of shortcuts, sadly, are taken even with fresh produce. You know, a lot of times now, luckily, there's starting to be a lot more transparency with things, which is awesome. But being in New Zealand, just that is the culture in the country, like as a whole. When the place I worked, stodged at a place in Nelson, which is on the northern end of the South Island, and the gentleman there had worked for Marco Pierre White, which is crazy. I think New Zealand is probably the most underrated country regarding food in the world, hands down. Pay attention, people. It's a good place. But it's just working with him for 3 days, like, really made me realize how much the importance of the relationship between the chef and the farmer was. When you're serving wine from 2.5 miles down the road and you bring in that tour with your food, and it was a game changer. I did not stay there. I truthfully think it might have been the biggest mistake culinary wise, but I was fortunate enough and got a job at Hookah Lodge, which is right dead center in the North Island, there on Taupo and Hookah Falls. But even there, it's the mindset, you know, I was in a country where the longest you're away from the ocean is 3 hours, maybe. So there was no such thing as shipping seafood. It was caught the night before and at your doorstep the next day. I mean, there was no, you know, I do a lot of business with Sea to Table, and that's, I feel like they're much on the same mindset of coming straight from the dock and coming to them. I mean, the fishermen were bringing us the fish in the middle of New Zealand. I mean, it's not, and it was from that point, like, that I made the decision then, like, okay, this is how it should be. So this is, I'm either going to go down in flames or we're going to start a movement. And I'm excited where, you know, I moved back to Nashville after that, worked at the Hermitage Hotel. That was a fun experience, but very quickly I realized Nashville was kind of on the cusp of deciding that it wanted to no longer be Nashville and be a metropolitan area as it is now. And it's the food scene's completely different now than it was when I was there. But the same thing, Hermitage had just acquired a farm and they were really trying to push that movement. Then when I came to Knoxville, first thing I did, before we even opened the restaurant, I went to the farmer's market. I started forming relationships. And now it's, you know, we've got everybody that's here tonight. We use local produce and meats as much as they can. You know, I strive to, generally speaking, in prime produce months, you know, about 90% of the stuff that I'm serving in my restaurant, I can tell you whose hands pulled it out of the ground. And, well, you know, our pork comes from 6.5 miles from the restaurant. Our beef is 18 miles from the restaurant. And then I'm trying to use the best fish and traceable fish that I can. It's a neat to see the growth in the mindset and how our clients really want to know the stories too. It helps us out tremendously.
I'm sure. And I mean, people are invested in supporting the community and knowing their farmers. I think right now, both the farm to table movement is gaining so much traction, and also I think Southern food is kind of having a renaissance right now. So it's a good fusion.
Yeah, it definitely is, and it's I think Southern food's kind of getting a different name. I think people are realizing that Southern food's not necessarily fried chicken and cornbread and beans. You know, we're definitely a lot of refinement. That's kind of how I take play on. I mean, I'm born and raised Tennessee, been there pretty much all my life. But I'm not a huge fan of fried food. And I mean, let me rephrase it. I do enjoy eating my share, but I really try to keep in mindset, like, I want people to be satisfied. I don't want people to be miserable. And, you know, I want them to come back. And we've kind of taken that approach to how we do things, from education. You know, my wife and I, when we talk about the restaurant, like, our goal even from the front end is, like, Knoxville does not have a lot of this in town. So our goal, we're going to have to educate our clients, because they're used to, I mean, Knoxville at one point in time was the number one per capita chain city in America. I think that's been within the last 10 years, if that tells you anything. But now there's definitely a lot more independence, and I feel like there's a lot more desire to have food with a name and with a face.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was gonna ask, like, how would you describe the culinary scene in Knoxville? But it sounds like the description is it's changing fast.
It is changing fast, and you know, it's one of those things I feel like the Platte Apron was kind of on the front end of it. We were the first restaurant in town to just say, hey, this is how we're gonna do it, and we're gonna do it this way. And you know, it's sadly, we're gonna do it the way that we want to do it, and if you're not a fan of it, we understand, because the Platte Apron is not for everyone, and still to this day, we are not for everyone. But we're going to stick to our guns, and it is an education process for us, but just as much for the community. You know, I think that's how we perceived ourselves. One of our kind of little catchphrases or slogans is that we support a community that supports us, and that's from the farm to the restaurant to the mouth. I really try not to use farm to table very much. I think it's turned into a very cliche sort of thing. I think it was dead on, you know, 7-8 years ago, when actually I felt like there was a little more revelation of that movement. And even when you go back to Alice Waters and for years, but I think in Knoxville, we were seeing restaurants that would buy local tomatoes from a very large that sells throughout the Southeast. And all of a sudden they were a farm to table restaurant when they had one thing. So it's been a little frustrating. So for us, it's, It's we're supporting community that supports us through food.
Yeah, doesn't get much better than that. And so what are you bringing from the Plaid Apron to the Beard House this evening?
I'm bringing Knoxville. It's pretty cool. Our first dish, I recently formed a relationship with David, the chef and owner of Farm and Sparrow and Soul Pizza in Asheville. Out of the blue, got a text. There's a farmer there, Care of the Earth Farm, named Megan Allen, that she used to do a little bit of stuff for restaurants. Now it's strictly CSAs, and she'll grow seed. And got a message, and she was just like, hey, David wants to, is trying to get some of his flowers and whatnot, because he had kind of helped the movement in Western North Carolina for growing grains and stuff that is truly in North Carolina. I mean, Asheville's an hour and 35 minutes from us, so it's not really that far, just over the mountains. And he's like, hey, I want you to try this grit that Megan's growing. And I'm like, okay, tell me a little bit about it. He said, well, it's called Cherokee White Eagle. It's a purple grit style corn. He said, as far as I know, it hasn't been grown in over 100 years. I said, excuse me? He said, and I said, Megan's growing it? He said, yeah. And he said, you'll be the first one to have it.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, send it to me. So from what, as far as I know, tonight will be the first time it's been served, unless somebody snuck in and got it before tonight. It's really cool. It's not a sweet style grit. I do use a local farmer there in town for our grits that we use at the restaurant. But I felt like these, for a starter, for a first course, had a little more story, a little more history. And it's always cool to see, particularly with Appalachian area, there's always a lot of push and shove to bring back seeds. And there's a lot of food history in that sense, from the Cherokee Indians to going, you know, slaves crossing over and all sorts of stuff. But this was just cool, an opportunity to kind of feature it. And it's just kind of neat, the history behind it. But then I've also, this dish will pretty much be completely from Knoxville. My produce, I got lucky, been bugging one of my farmers who's got an awesome asparagus bed, large asparagus bed, a little more than an acre, which for a small farmer, that's a lot of asparagus. And it literally sprouted 4 days before I got here.
Oh,
and I got 4 pounds, and that was about all he had. So I was like, bring it, we'll make it work. So we're doing that. And then I've Hines Valley Farm, is John Ledbetter, is someone that I've been working with since day one. And he's been really good to me, and we'll play with some stuff when he can. But we'll be using some kale bolts and teiyu, which is a Chinese leafy broccoli. We're just using the bulb end of it. And some green garlic, which is pretty awesome. And then he actually grew some walking onions for me that I've turned into a vinaigrette that we're going to dress that. And it'll be our first course with some pea shoots for another from, we got a little cool little urban farm that they, I can't remember who sang the song, tore a parking lot and made it.
Oh, Joni Mitchell.
Yes. And they literally, she and her investor tore up a parking lot, and we have a farm right outside of downtown Knoxville, and I'm getting pea tendrils from her tonight. And then desserts, not so much Knoxville, because strawberries were just, they're on delay right now. They're on sleepy vacation. They're on groundhog time.
Yeah, me too.
So, but we'll be doing a green strawberry preserves, olive oil cake with a coriander strawberry ice cream. And then I've got a little bit of dehydrated and freeze-dried ice cream, or freeze-dried strawberries to garnish with.
Yeah.
So a little savory, not super sweet, kind of tart. That's kind of, I love desserts, but I don't like sweet desserts. We've got some really stellar wines to go with it, thanks to H&B Wine Imports. I'm excited to be here. This is, you know, a high five for a chef anytime that you can. One, it's my first time in the Beard House, and it's just cool. It's all but Joseph, who won the Beard Award a few years ago. It's his second run, but it's always good, one, to have somebody that's been here so we can kind of quiz and be like, all right, what are we getting into? We all know each other. We all collaborate with each other. When we have questions, it's always nice to have some feedback. And
that's good. It sounds like a good community.
We're a small community, but we really are a good community. I mean, I still think Knoxville's got a ways to go, but man, we're moving in the right direction. I mean, we really are, and it's exciting. It's taking a little longer than I had hoped for. The Plaid Apron will be 7 years old in May.
Happy birthday.
So yeah, blink of an eye. Seems like 2 weeks worth, but. We're excited with where things are going. We're super excited to be here at the James Beard House.
Excellent. Well, I have one last question for you. On your day off,
go.
Where do you eat in Knoxville? Outside of your own kitchen at home.
Yeah, it's funny. I cook a whole lot. Like I said, I've got a 3.5-year-old and a 1-year-old, and they eat what we eat. Any day of the week, they don't really have the option that they want a grilled cheese sandwich. It's usually denied unless we're all eating grilled cheese sandwiches. I'm a huge Brian Strutz that owns a Dopo Pizza. It's been there a little more than a year now. Some of the best pizza I've ever had. And he's good to my boys when they come in. And that's probably the go-to spot. It probably would be Jesse, who you'll talk to later with Kaizen. But he has the same hours as I do. So we don't ever get to
partake. Get to cross over, yeah.
Yes. Dopo. We've got a neat little ethnic scene too. There's a couple little Vietnamese and Chinese and Asian places that are pretty delicious too. So it's kind of a unique little hub that a lot of people don't realize that there's more than just Southern food in Knoxville. It's a unique little it's not a metropolis. I'm not even going to say that.
A mini metropolis.
Sure, sure. We'll go micro metropolis.
Bustling city.
But Knoxville has everything you want, and not the big city appeal. I mean, it's got that's just it. It's a big city, but it doesn't feel like it.
I love it. Well, I'll let you get back to the kitchen. I don't want to keep you too long, but thank you so much.
Much obliged. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Next up for this episode of Heritage Radio Network on tour at the Knockout of Knoxville is Joseph Lynn. Thank you to our sponsor, Springer Mountain Farm, and Visit Knoxville for making this event possible. Your restaurant is called J.C. Holdway, and looks like you're coming up on 2 years, having that been open. That's fantastic. Joseph was the winner of Best Chef Southeast in 2013 from the James Beard Foundation. So congratulations, Joseph. It sounds like you are a veteran of the James Beard House and part of the family, so it must be really exciting to be back here with some comrades from Knoxville.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So tell me a little bit about how you got started cooking. I heard that your first job in the food space was in a butcher shop. So what was it that you liked about that?
It was a way to, for me not to go to college for a little bit and waste some time and try to figure out what I wanted to do in life. And I just enjoyed that job so much that it became this thing where I would go and, the owner, who's a great friend of mine, he would say, have you ever had a veal chop before? And I was like, no. And so he's like, well, you should try one. They're great. And I was like, well, how do you cook it? He's like, just grill it. So went out by myself, like a little Weber Smoky Joe grill, because everybody was like, meat on a charcoal grill or wood grill tastes better. So tried that. And I was like, well, that's really good. And so that's just kind of how it started out, just cooking for fun. And then it became to entertain friends and hang out. And I was the grill guy. And then so everybody's like, you should look at going to culinary school. You're really good at cooking. And I was like, no way. I don't want to do that. And it kind of turned out that that's what I did want to do. I saw something in the Knoxville paper about chefs and then something on local news one day. They're both the same day. And I was really intrigued by it because it was before the Food Network was in our area in Knoxville. And so I was watching that and I was like, yeah, maybe that is what I want to do. And so I called my dad, who was a guidance counselor, and was like, hey, I think I want to know what I want to do in life now. And he's like, okay. And so I told him, I think I want to go to culinary school. And so he was very supportive and said, hey, we'll go look at Johnson & Wales in Charleston, South Carolina. And that's what we did. I went there immediately, was like, this is what I want to do. And so went to school and was fortunate that I got an internship at Blackberry Farm between my first and second year. And that led to me working with some great people. When I was there doing that, Sean Brock was helping the chef of Peninsula Grill at the time, and Sean and I hit it off really well, and so I wanted to go work at Peninsula Grill with him, and I was like, I want to work with cooks just like that. They're just intense and very focused, and so I went to work at Peninsula Grill, and he was a line cook there, and so we had a great time working there, and then it just kind of, that fostered a relationship where he and I worked together in Nashville, and then after that, I wanted to go back to Blackberry because I'd only done an internship there, and so went back there for like 10 years, and then I decided to open my own restaurant, so here I am.
Here you are. So you were the first Tennessee-based chef to win a James Beard Award.
Correct.
And I feel like that's really significant. Southern food seems to be having a renaissance right now, and from talking with your other collaborators at this event, it sounds like Knoxville is growing into a culinary presence in the South. So tell me a little bit about you know, what you love about Knoxville, and if you could describe the culinary scene and where you see it going, I'd love to hear that.
Well, I think the scene's changed drastically, and some people in the area call it the Blackberry effect, because a lot of us have worked at Blackberry and kind of ventured off to do our own thing. And, you know, Matt's one of those veterans, Drew is, myself, and there's even more out there, and it's just kind of great. I mean, there's a great pizza place called Adopo that Brian Strutz, he's, you know, doing fantastic pizza, using seasonally local produce. And I think that's been one of the biggest aspects is the Knoxville Farmers Market, which is, or Market Square Farmers Market, which is a block away from my restaurant. Matt's restaurant's located on the square where they hold it. And you'll see Drew out there with a wagon and his kid and his wife, and they'll be out there getting produce from different vendors. And that's kind of really made it easier for the chefs to connect with other farmers, because even working at Blackberry, that was one of the struggles, even though we had a working farm, was, you know, at that time we couldn't produce enough for both restaurants, and so we had to rely on other farmers, and it was just like this struggle to find people. That is a big farming community, and to find people that were growing, and now it's this thing that all of a sudden there's just people like, hey, we have this stuff, and Pick Tennessee and all these other resources to go and find. That's kind of helped connect chefs and farmers, so it's really helped take that off. And then especially the market, we have a winter market now as well, and there's just a lot of people growing things, so it's great for us. So I think that's kind of helping elevate the scene. Before there was nothing, and now there's these markets, and it's just really made our lives easier as chefs to be able to be connected to people that are growing great products.
Excellent. So I hear that everything at J.C. Holdway is cooked over a wood fire, which is that correct? Or is it just
most dishes have most something dishes. That has been influenced by fire or smoke in some sort of sense or fashion on the menu. We try to really focus on that.
And why was that a flavor profile that was important to you to prioritize?
Well, I think it started with that kind of going back to getting into food, that flavor of fire. I used to like to camp a lot and cook things over wood fire. I've got two cooks that work for me now, and they're huge campers, and they like just rock the grill, like they're the best at it, and it's because they like cooking outdoors, and so they're just kind of like, yeah, it's like camping out, so they really do well at it. But for me, it was just going back to that flavor. And then furthermore, at Blackberry we had wood burning grill and wood burning oven, and those flavors just couldn't be replicated any other way. And so I think in the region that we are, with country ham and smokehouses and just kind of that heritage of people using that as a flavor profile and what we cooked, that really kind of was what I wanted to do too. And I just think that flavor is something that I love, and so it's just, I think it's reflective of the region and the style of food I like to cook, so, and people seem to have been enjoying it, so.
Yeah, I think it's a Yotam Ottolenghi says, like, every dish that you can add a charred flavor is improved, which I think I totally agree with that. So tell me about what you're cooking tonight and what it means to you in terms of Knoxville. What is it? What story does it tell about Knoxville?
Well, it's the dish I'm doing tonight. We're doing a pork loin and shoulder. The shoulder's been confit in Benton's bacon vat and then pulled and pressed, and so we'll sear it so it's crispy. And we're serving it with a ham hock broth made from Benton's ham hocks, potatoes, grilled ramps, and fiddlehead ferns. And the dish is kind of an homage to Alan Benton. He and I go on this ramp hunt every spring, and he and his wife will cook ham and bacon, and then all that fat, they then kind of cook ramps and then potatoes, and it's just like the best thing you've ever had. And so I was always like, I want to do a dish that's like captures that moment of like going on this hunt with them and all the flavors of it. And so I mean, when you're out in the woods, you can find the fiddleheads, we find the ramps, so it's kind of like all these things just kind of in a refined dish. So it's kind of like a big, like, thanks, Alan, for all you do. And so it really honors him, and that's kind of was the inspiration behind the dish. So it should be tasty. We're also doing a snack of chicken croquettes with Carolina Gold rice and green garlic aioli. So it's just kind of things that are in the season. The chicken's kind of like dish kind of take on smothered chicken, but all in one bite with the sauce is just super tasty of the spring. It actually came from a friend of mine's garden. They have green garlic right now. She's actually here at the dinner tonight, so it's kind of exciting. So we put it on the menu, like Hat and Dan's green garlic. So she's been a great photographer friend for years. And so anyway, it's kind of like, hey, thanks for letting us have this. And they're like, we have tons of green garlic and garlic chives if y'all need them. I said, yeah, we'll take it. So it's kind of one of those things of like, if somebody has just a little something we can use, we use it and find a way to put it on the menu.
That sounds so delicious. And did you go out and pick the ramps and fiddleheads for our meal tonight?
not yet. They're a little early. I had to order some in, unfortunately. But typically, I would go do that. Like last year for the restaurant, we picked all but 1 week. I went and got all the ramps for the restaurant. So it was kind of fun being able to go do that. And we ended up actually clipping all the roots and replanting those. My parents have a cabin in North Carolina, and we've actually planted a hillside, and they've started coming up. So it's kind of cool that we're able to take, you know, the roots and replant and then kind of repurpose them. And for me, it's like, yay, I always have a little spot to go find some. So it's kind of exciting to be able to have those there. So.
Well, that's great that you've got your hands in the process, kind of from the dirt to the plate. That's
I think that was thing. it was kind of a learning thing for me at Blackberry, having a working farm there. The point we've even got a couple little plots in the old city of Knoxville. There's an urban garden there, and we have two plots for stuff that we grow for the restaurant, whether it's flowers for the tables, to just something simple like radishes. But it's just something that we have to have a little bit more connection to downtown. And that's also that same plot is where we get Abby. It's a farming group called Abbey Fields, and it's urban gardens, so they grow lettuces for the restaurants. Like all four of us use them. They grow amazing like little pea shoots, but it's just really cool because they're like, what do you want us to grow? And we're like, that's so cool that you're like looking at the interstate and there's a big huge farm right there next to it. So
maybe you can plan your menu ahead.
Yeah, it's great. So it's kind of like where my little garden is. I go and I like peek and see what they've got coming in, so we can kind of start planning ahead. Like we just changed a pork dish to have these great greens that they've got right now, like red Russian kale, and they're just, you know, small little 2 to 3 inch leaves and beautiful. And so I was like, oh, I want to use those. So anyway, I was talking to her when she came in the restaurant. She's like, yeah, we can just pick those if that's what you want. So it's just this cool, again, that relationship with your farmer and knowing, you know, hey, that's what we want to use. And so it's kind of cool.
And I think that's what makes smaller cities and cities that are closer to farmland so special when it comes to food, because you can have that sense of community and collaboration. And I don't want to keep you too much longer because I'm sure you have a lot of work to do to prepare for tonight. But I asked Drew this question, and he actually mentioned the pizza place is at Adobo.
Correct.
So I challenged you to come up with someone different, but I had asked if it's your day off and you're home in Knoxville, where do you go out to dinner?
Well, the tough thing is all of us are closed on the same day, so that's why we all end up at Adobo. It's funny, you'll run into Jesse there. Matt's also open. He's open on Sunday, so I go to Amelia sometimes as well. It's funny. We end up going to other restaurants, too. Like, David Chang kind of blew up one of my favorite spots called Asia Kitchen. It was this little strip mall Chinese restaurant, and it just ended up being on Ugly Delicious, and now everybody knows about it. But it's kind of like our favorite little place to go. And there's another place we go for tacos called La Esperanza that's not too far from downtown. It's delicious as well. But I don't know. We just kind of we go to each other's restaurants. But Adobo is, yeah, like Drew said, but those other two restaurants are two of my favorites too.
Excellent.
So
yeah, I'm just counting on you guys to plan my trip, my first trip to Knoxville. You can tell me all the places I need to go eat aside from, obviously, your restaurant.
Yeah, there's great places to eat and great, you know, there's awesome, you know, art museum, and the outdoors is just like the best thing about living in East Tennessee. Mountains, lakes. There's a lot of outdoor center. Like we have great mountain biking trails and all. It's just fun outdoor stuff if you're into that kind of thing. And really close to downtown Knoxville, so it's a pretty special place to be right now.
Excellent. Well, I definitely want to come visit soon. Thank you so much for coming up from the kitchen. I appreciate it. Joseph Len, I'm so excited to taste what you have for us tonight.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our next interview here at the James Beard House for the Knockout of Knoxville, made possible by Springer Mountain Farms and Visit Knoxville, is Chef Jesse Neumister.
Okay, so I am sitting down now with Jesse Neumeister, who is the executive chef and owner of Kaizen Kitchen. I was going to ask you about the pronunciation. Thank you for correcting me.
You got the last name right, though, which is...
Yeah, did you use like Neumeister? Yeah, or? Yeah. Okay, so Kaizen Kitchen, which is a Japanese-inspired restaurant in downtown Knoxville. And I guess this leads me into my first question for you. Tell me about the concept of Kaizen and what it means to your cooking.
So Kaizen, the term, actually means like a continuous improvement. So it's like a process of always improving and looking at like everybody has valuable input. And so that's something, I guess that's a philosophy I've kind of always had, but never been able to put a word to it. But that's like a philosophy that I've kind of, I guess, always carried like through since I first became a chef. But I've never had a word for it. And I can't remember how I came across that word. I know it's really big in like engineering circles and whatnot. But so I just wanted to apply that philosophy to the restaurant. And then plus, like, when I got the space, I didn't know exactly what I was going to do, but I knew I wanted to kind of like stretch and diversify what offerings there were in downtown Knoxville. And I knew I wanted to do something geared towards like Southeast Asian ingredients. Not necessarily, like, we don't do any like authentic Asian food, but it's all using those ingredients and then just using techniques that I have that I've learned along the way. So that was like the main thing, was just like diversifying the cuisine in Knoxville and like helping to add to that diversification. And then also the space is really small. And so when I was looking at like inspirations, I was thinking about like food stalls, mainly in Japan and Thailand and Vietnam. And then I came across izakayas. I'd never heard of izakayas before. And so I started reading into those. And that concept's pretty cool. So we kind of, you know, we've borrowed from a few different inspirations.
That's always a good thing. Wow, the motorcycles are going crazy.
Speaking of Thailand, yeah, all the motorbikes. but, yeah, so it's all kind of worked. You know, that I think it's easy to, like, my vision was always, like, pretty clear going into it. It was just, like, I needed to see hardcore examples and pull from that to build something, so.
And I think sometimes having the language before you have the concept can help set yourself up for success. And it sounds like the concept of Kaizen makes it so that change is your friend and you can adapt and grow.
One of the hard things has been like, so we opened with izakaya in our name, and then I realized like we weren't really holding true to what that was. Like, izakaya is usually a very, very large menus of small bites, and we do have a really large sake menu, which a lot of them have, but I just couldn't offer like that large of a menu because my kitchen's, I don't know, 100 square feet, and there were some larger dishes I wanted to do, so that it trying to like keep people from like being confused when they come in, they think they're in like an authentic izakaya. It's like we're not that, but it's just, yeah, that's the inspiration. So
you're originally from Indiana,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
What brought you to Knoxville? Why did, is that the place where you hung your hat?
I had actually never been to Knoxville before I moved there. I'd driven through it a few times. My dad lives in South Carolina, so you drive basically north side of Knoxville before you cut over to North Carolina and go south. So I'd never really been there. I stayed in Pigeon Forge once. I remember watching the OJ Chase in Pigeon Forge. That's the only reason I remember it.
An important memory.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was the OJ Chase. I'm not sure. But I was basically going into it blindly. But some friends of mine that I'd worked with in Charleston, one of them had a sister that lives in Knoxville, still lives there, and she had wanted to open a brasserie. And I'd already left Charleston, moved back to Louisville to finish school, culinary school, and I got a call from them to see if they wanted to come to if I wanted to come to Knoxville, be a sous chef at a brasserie. And I was like, sure. I didn't question it. I mean, it was my first opportunity to chef position. I knew who I was going to be working for and working with. Just felt good about it. And been there since 2005.
Wow. Yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah.
And I also read that your mother was a Spanish teacher.
Yes.
So I'm curious, it looks like on the menu at Kaizen, it's a lot of small plates, kind of tapas style portions.
Yeah,
so I'm curious, like, if your familiarity growing up with Spanish culture helped to influence your menu?
Yeah, that did have a lot to do with it. And if you look at like other cultures throughout the world, like there's a lot of small plate drinking food. But Spanish tapas was my first introduction into that. And going to Spain and like going on a tapas crawl was like, yeah, it's kind of life changing. Just seeing just how much food and drinking play into like the nightlife and the revelry and just like meeting strangers and like they were real quick friends, you know? And strangely enough too, like growing up in Little Terre Haute, Indiana, there was like a pretty diverse culture there with, there's multiple universities. So I had a lot of friends whose parents were from Syria, Philippines, I mean, out from the Philippines. There's just people from like all over. So having that, I guess like a little bit of a worldview to start, I think has really helped.
I think a chef with a diverse background of experiences is going to do nothing but enhance your menu. So I guess, how would you describe this culinary moment in Knoxville? I know from traveling around and talking to chefs, it seems like Southern cuisine is in a renaissance right now where people are gaining a deeper appreciation for it. So how does that look like in Knoxville?
I mean, I feel like the growth has been really organic there. But yeah, we're having a really good moment. And a lot of it's attributed to the three other guys I'm cooking with. You know, Joseph, especially in Blackberry Farms, like a lot of their alums have moved to Knoxville and just, you know, this, the culinary world, like you network so quickly. And so the people that work really hard tend to like get around other people that work really hard. And so the people that like left Blackberry are like coming back, to work for these guys, and it's been great. Like it's brought a lot of really good talent to Knoxville. So
nice.
Yeah.
And tell me about what it is that you're cooking tonight at the Beard House, and what story does it tell about Kaizen and about Knoxville?
So I actually just kind of did some changes to my dishes last night. I had to email Victoria at like 11:30.
It's room for improvement, right? That's
yeah.
Kaizen.
Yeah. Always improving. So the appetizer is a sticky rice, like it's kind of similar to a blini. The dough I just learned how to make a few weeks ago from a woman from Malaysia who owns a restaurant in Knoxville. I've gone there for a dim sum day on Sunday and tried this dumpling. I was like, will you show me how to make this? So she came into my restaurant 2 days later and showed me how to make it. And it's going to have some chopped chicken livers with lap chang, which is a Chinese sausage, and then some Cruz Farms sour cream. Cruz Farms is a dairy farm in Knoxville that makes incredible buttermilk. So,
how was it traveling with buttermilk?
Well, I already had, so the cream's already cultured. They do naturally cultured buttermilk. And my wife actually brought that this morning. I had forgotten it. We, all of us just checked coolers. Like, we had our mise en place just ready to go. So that dish, I mean, you know, I've got Springer Mountain Farm livers, which are delicious. The Cruz Farms. And it, I kind of like, it's a little bit of a nod to New York too, with the blinis and sour cream and chopped liver.
Perfect. We appreciate it.
And I hope New York likes it. And then the entree is, I'm doing a foie gras pate. Foie gras is one of my favorite ingredients to work with. And it's getting served with a mushroom cassoulet. There's a place in Knoxville, they grow mushrooms like just for chefs. And so they had made a special blend of mushrooms for me for this trip. And so the mushroom gravy is actually cow soy, which is a northern Thai soup. And my wife and I just went to Thailand in January, and it was one of our favorite things we ate. But it's also a really soulful soup. And when you're making it, like with the shrimp paste and everything, it kind of has the smells of it kind of remind me of like New Orleans, like Cajun cuisine, which is pretty southern to me. So I don't know. It's a good nod, I think, to the South, even though it's a northern Thai dish. But just that like soulfulness in the cuisine, you know. Mm-hmm. And I like finding that in different cultures. So
yeah, the parallels
yeah.
are always really beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay.
Look to the latitudes for the parallels.
Oh, yeah. So is Knoxville on the same parallel as
we
Japan?
Are yeah, we're or? Pretty close to Tokyo's parallel, I believe.
Cool. Yeah, that makes sense.
We're on
then.
The 75th. 35. I can't remember.
I believe you.
I think it's 35.
We'll Google it later. So I've been asking everyone this because I think it's really funny. I think it sounds like all of you guys have the same go-to restaurant in Knoxville. So when it's your night off, mm-hmm. where do you go to eat? I've heard Adobo twice now.
Well, just third time's a charm, I guess. Yeah. Because, I mean, they're open on Sundays and Mondays. Yeah. And a lot of us, our restaurants, I know Amelia is open on Sunday nights. But all of us are closed on Sundays and Mondays, so that's it.
And what are you excited to eat here in New York?
I don't know. I mean, we just kind of, whenever me and my wife go to a big city, we don't really plan a whole lot. So, like, last time we came to New York, she surprised me for my birthday, and it was the greatest weekend. So we ended up just getting into Co. Like, the
you
day
just
before.
Wandered in.
Yeah, well, yeah, we got in on a Thursday. My birthday was Saturday. Got into Co. And then went to the Comedy Cellar that night. Dave Chappelle walked in. So I was like,
oh,
and
my
then
I
went and saw A Tribe Called Quest the next day.
That sounds like a really good birthday.
It was a good weekend.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. It's going to be hard to top. But here, I mean, it's like, you always have a short list of places you want to go. Mm-hmm. But then again, I was like just wandering into places and see what happens. Went to Impeon last night, the taqueria, and it was mm-hmm. fantastic. So
nice. Yeah, they've been getting a lot of really good attention. Yeah. And yeah, what'd you eat?
I had the fried duck tacos with habanero honey and shrimp ceviche with ají dulce peppers, and a mezcal margarita.
That sounds really good.
It was really good.
So is there anything specific that you're excited about on the menu at Kaizen coming up this summer?
There's a couple things. We change and tweak our menu pretty frequently. I'd say at least every 2 weeks. There's, even if it's just an ingredient coming off or something like, or something being added. But so it's always been kind of a constant change. We do always look forward to, so the Market Square Farmers Market's probably the biggest farmers market in Knoxville, and it's a block and a half away from the restaurant. So, and it's Wednesdays and Saturdays. So just like whatever's being offered there is always fun to work with. And then I'm actually getting ready to open a second restaurant.
Oh, congratulations.
In a couple months. So been like slowly handing the reins over to the existing staff at Kaizen. With it being a really small restaurant, it's like easy to manage. We've got a really great staff. So, I think they look forward to me going out of town a lot. And I look forward to them looking forward to that. So,
And is it too soon to ask what we can expect for your new restaurant?
Maybe a little too soon.
Okay.
But
so
it
we'll circle back.
It is adjacent. Like, we share a roof with a music venue. It's one of the newer club spaces. And my wife is the GM of the venue. So I think it's going to be a really unique music experience having the restaurant that we're going to be building there. And I think the touring acts are going to really like it because they can come in and sit down. They already have like one of the nicest green rooms you can think of. So they can come down and eat, and I don't know. I know they work hard, so.
Cool. Well, yeah. You'll have to keep us posted once you open and tell us what to expect. I don't want to keep you much longer. I'm sure you've got work to do downstairs, but thank you, Jesse Neumeister, for
you,
coming
Hannah.
And chatting. And I can't wait to taste what you have in store for us tonight.
Yeah, look forward to it.
Great. And we are back at the Knockout of Knoxville at the James Beard House today. We've moved outside because it is the very first beautiful day in April, so you'll hear some birds chirping in the background as opposed to the motorcycles that we had before. And I'm excited to sit down with Matt Gallagher, who is the chef at Knox Mason and Amelia, which are sister restaurants in Knoxville. Knox Mason is a seasonably focused menu highlighting southern cuisine and all of the beautiful produce that they have in the area, while Amelia celebrates the cuisine of the Emilia-Romagna region in Italy. Is that how you pronounce it?
Emilia-Romagna.
Romagna. Okay, yeah. Excuse me. So Matt, I hear that you started cooking as a child on your family farm. So what was the first dish that you made that really blew your friends and family away?
I'm not sure if it's...
You felt proud of it.
You know what? When I remember my brother's 2 years older, and I remember one day his friends were over, and I made some sort of pasta, spaghetti with something, and... they enjoyed it, except for one of his friends realized it had mushrooms in it and punched me, punched me in the arm. Not an assault by any means, but you know, the fact that my older brother and his friends, that my food was worthy of, you know, that they enjoyed it. You know, that was a somewhat significant memory, I guess.
Yeah, you always want to impress your older brother, and
well, yeah,
as long as no one punches you.
Sure, sure, yeah. And nobody's punched me for my cooking since, I don't think.
That's good. I was going to follow up with that question. Yeah, we'll make sure tonight is no exception to that.
Yeah, but I think back then, you know, the way I was cooking is somewhat similar to the way I cook now, in that I would just raid the pantry and, you know, make something up. And so having not ever gone to culinary school, I don't feel like I've ever had the barriers or the structure in that way, and allowed myself to kind of be creative.
Excellent. And I'm sure living on a farm, was it a working farm? Was there produce available that you could play with?
My mom had two separate gardens. So yeah, lots of produce. We had animals at the time, you know, over the years, but nothing that we ever really had to tend to. We had a chicken and rabbits and a sheep and horses, but nothing that was ever, you know, kind of raised for our consumption.
Excellent. And I have to say, one of my favorite parts of your bio, which I'm sure you are maybe a little tired of talking about, is that you were, for a long time, cooked for musicians while they were on tour.
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like that must, cooking on the go,
right,
must teach you so much about how to run a restaurant kitchen, because I'm sure you're beyond adaptable.
Right, right. I did start cooking with my mom, or my mom started a catering company and two small restaurants when I was about 9 years old. And by the time I was 12 years old, I was working, you know, 5 days a week in the restaurant, not really cooking, but helping out in all aspects. But she's kind of a self-taught, kind of a, you know, entrepreneur, you know, always doing something, always working. And so, so her influence has kind of influenced me quite a bit, in that I can be creative, I can be nimble, adaptable, you know, push through, make it happen. So cooking on the road, I spent 4 years at Blackberry Farm prior to cooking on the road, and that's very structured and very buttoned up and very precise. And you have many people, many days prepping to make a single dish. And then you get on the road and you go shopping every morning, and you have to do breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and execute it all that day, and then start over the very next day. So the luxury of having a couple of days to simmer a veal stock, or you know, some of those things that I got used to as a cook, had to put on, you know, on the back burner and be creative with the resources I had. But it was a job that I know a lot of people don't get to do, and never took it for granted. I loved almost every minute of it. You know, it's challenging, but it's a lot of fun, and I got to see the world. And you know, being able to be paid to travel is a luxury not many people get to experience.
Excellent. Do you have any good stories from the road that you're allowed to tell about some of your clients? I'm always curious about,
you know,
is it what happens on tour stays on tour?
You know, nothing too crazy.
Yeah.
Every day is crazy in some way. You know, some of the most significant memories are the challenging parts. We were in set up in a tent in Idaho, and a dust storm came through and kind of wiped out most of the kitchen, which was, we had to retreat, you know, they evacuated us, and so we lost most of dinner that night, so we had to be creative on how to feed the crew with, you know, limited resources at that point. But, you know, something's always happening, you know, buses breaking down on the side of the road in the middle of the night, and figuring out how you're going to get to the next city to cook, you know, because the show must go on, as they say.
That they do say that, and yeah. I mean, the same is true in a restaurant.
Right.
So tell me a little bit about balancing two different restaurants, two different concepts, two different menus. And do you see parallels in this regional Emilia-Romagna cuisine to the American South?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, the challenges of balancing two restaurants, you know, I have to be available to my people. And I have, I think, 46 employees currently between the two. And it just takes a lot of good people. And so I have great people, and they know I'm there to support them. But I'm also able to be in New York right now on a Friday night where we're going to be very busy at both restaurants. So it takes great people, and I very much appreciate my crew for that. But, yeah, what drew me to Italy, and specifically Emilia-Romagna, is the ingredients. It's very ingredient-driven cuisine, very seasonal. And, you know, Appalachian cuisine is poor people food. And so, you know, our you know, histories and our ancestors in the Smokies had to be really resourceful and very creative, and use every part of the animal and preserve and pickle and do everything they could to survive, basically. And so I feel like I've wanted to honor that in Knox Mason. And so in peak season, we rely heavily on our farmers market and our local farmers. And in peak season, the last at least 3 years that I've done the study, we've spent 70% of our dollars on local and regional farms, which is a challenge, but it's a fun challenge. And Emilia-Romagna specifically, I was drawn to that region because that's where I feel like many of the iconic ingredients in Italian cuisine come from. So Parmesan, Pecorino, prosciutto, balsamic vinegar, mortadella, like all these building blocks of Italian cuisine come from this one region. And so so that's kind of how, as I was studying Italian food, you know, I think I went through about 60 cookbooks in a year. You know, this Emilia-Romagna region kept popping up over and over. And my grandmother, my maternal grandmother's name is Emily, and so Emilia is the Italian version of Emily. So in my mind, we were trying to bridge Southern hospitality with some handmade Italian cuisine.
Yeah, it makes sense. I feel like the climate and the sensibility is similar. Have you spent some time in Italy and gotten
very,
to learn a
very
bit?
Very little. When I was on tour, I got to spend a couple of days in Italy. Came up to New York about 4 years ago and at the International Chefs Congress and did some pasta workshops and some things like that. So, but mostly I'm self-taught in many ways. I've had great mentors, but no culinary school. So books have always been a great resource for me. And then just getting in the kitchen and figuring out what works.
Yeah, you learn by doing.
Yeah, for sure.
I love it. So tell me a little bit about what you're preparing for us tonight and what story does it tell about your restaurants and about Knoxville?
Yeah, so I'm doing one canapé and the pasta course tonight. And in the canapé, we are taking a rice flour batter. We get rice for Knox Mason from Anson Mills in South Carolina. And
we love Anson Mills.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And so I just taking some of the very early spring vegetables, really light, super crispy batter. And then I bought some chilies at our farmer's market on Saturday, fermented those this week, and made a little fermented chili aioli with that. So that's kind of a, you know, the Knox Mason contribution to the dinner. And then the pasta course is going to be a squid ink didelini, which is tiny, tiny little pasta. We're going to cook it risotto style with some shellfish stock. We're folding in sea urchin butter, some smoked San Marzano tomatoes, some jumbo lump crab, and then ramps are just now in season. So as of like this week. So I've got some foraged ramps, and then a little Calabrian chili at the end, just for a little heat.
That sounds really, really good. So I guess I've been seeing a lot. I feel like past couple of years, Southern cuisine is having a renaissance, and I think the rest of the country and the rest of the world is learning to appreciate it and to see it as more than just, you know, fried food and mac and cheese. And I'm so curious to hear how that's manifesting in Knoxville. Like, what is the culinary scene like there right now?
Well, I can't overstate how important our farmers market is to our restaurants, and the four chefs here tonight, myself included, we all rely heavily on the farmers market, the Market Square Farmers Market, which is the center of our downtown. I'm on the board. I'm on my fourth year of being on the board of the nonprofit that administers the farmers market. So, it's something both restaurants rely heavily on. Something I'm very passionate about. And our 15th anniversary is in May. So it's a market that has been around for longer than downtown Knoxville has had any sort of culinary scene.
Wow, that's awesome.
And so our philosophy when we opened Knox Mason is that we're a small restaurant and we want to work with small farms and we want to grow together. And we're in our sixth year. And so we've seen those relationships grow. And when our beef farmer was only processing two steers a week, he's now processing three, and he has potential to do more. So if a small farmer can increase his production 50% just from the support of a couple of small restaurants, that's huge. It's a win-win. We get great product from a great farm, and he's able to prosper a little bit. So those relationships are super important, and I think the farmers market has to be, you know, kind of the focal point of that growth in our culinary scene.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love that it's a symbiotic relationship that is benefiting the community, it's benefiting all of the growers and makers, as well as obviously enriching the culture and giving everyone who lives there exposure to all of this amazing food.
Right. And I've been all over the world, and I've been to farmers markets in many countries, in many cities, and you know, the Santa Monica farmers market's hard to compete with. It's pretty incredible. But for our region and for the size of our town, our market is incredible. I mean, there's a waiting waiting list. There's a years long waiting list to be a vendor at the market, and it's producer only. So there's no, you know, you can't get a bottle of water. You mean it's our executive director, Charlotte, is very strict, as she should be. And so it's producer only. So there's nothing being brought in from out of town or out of state. It's all super local.
I love it. I feel like I am gearing up to have a really good visit to Knoxville sometime soon because everyone has been telling me so many great things. And I've asked all the other chefs this, and I have gotten the same answer from every single one of you. So I'm going to ask you, on your night off, where do you go for dinner? I'll give you a hint what everyone else said.
Well, I think I know. I would probably say it would be my buddy Brian's restaurant, Adopo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, that is the consensus.
Yeah. I hope Brian's listening to this. We love you, Brian.
Well, you'll have to send him the episode because he gets like a shout out from every single chef here. It's incredible.
Yeah, and Brian's a great guy. He's got a great restaurant. I don't get out to eat as much as I would like, but when I do, he makes an andouille that he hasn't shared the recipe with me yet, but I crave it, and I don't crave many foods, so he's doing something right.
That's fantastic. Well, I will let you get back to the kitchen,
sure.
Matt. But thank you so much for stepping out and joining us. And for anyone visiting Knoxville, they should visit Matt Gallagher at Knox Mason and Amelia.
Yep.
Thanks, Matt.
Sounds great.
And that concludes our coverage of HRN on tour at the James Beard House here for the Knockout of Knoxville, which is an evening highlighting culinary talent from Knoxville, Tennessee. Thank you so much to Visit Knoxville and Springer Mountain Farms for making this coverage possible and putting this beautiful night together. I'm Hannah Forden for Heritage Radio Network.